This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Gary Kerr. Gary's the Chief Pharmacy Officer at Bay State Healthcare. He's going to talk to us about the issues he's most focused on today, the big issues facing Chief Pharmacy Officers, advice for leaders, and a lot more. Gary, can you take a moment and tell us a bit about yourself and about Bay State Healthcare?
Sure. In summary, Scott, I've been in pharmacy for over 45 years. Most recently, I came to Bay State Health in 2000, and in 2012, I became the chief pharmacy officer. And in that role, much more exposed to, you know, senior level issues, strategy, you know, a lot of strategy discussions, really pivoting on pharmacy as a revenue diversification, you know, strategy itself. So that's really from 2012 to today, a lot of focus on the ability to have the outpatient pharmacy pieces perform, you know, innovative roles, clinical pharmacy, kind of resting on the 340B platform, and, you know, also including things like infusions and specialty pharmacy.
And talk about today, when you look at sort of the big issues you focus on today as chief pharmacy officer, what are the top three or four issues you'd say you're focused on in any, you know, in your job today, in leadership today?
Yeah, so it's no secret. I think not all chief pharmacy officers deal with the 340B drug pricing program. We do, you know, several of our entities are categorized as disproportionate share entities, and therefore we do an awful lot with that drug pricing program. For us, it's all about compliance and optimization. So that's a number one high priority. We glue ourselves to what's going on the Hill, you know, pretty much every day. A lot of work with our government affairs folks and general advocacy. Secondly, an awful lot of focus on clinical pharmacists and their evolving, expanding roles in the outpatient space. That would include and, you know, have some emphasis on our specialty pharmacy program, which employs or deploys liaisons. So the liaisons are largely pharmacy technicians embedded in key offices. And then on the clinical pharmacy side, we're slowly but surely moving into areas that are heavily reliant on impactful roles, managing things like hypertension, cholesterol, diabetes, and beyond. And I think in general, I think we all deal with this drug shortage problem and supply chain, you know, evolution. So we're in the thick of that. And just in general, I already said it, but just to say it explicitly, business growth. I mean, we're heavily in the sustain and protect mode. We've grown dramatically, you know, since 2012 in this outpatient space. And, you know, right now there's so much activity, as I mentioned, you know, on the Hill and with big pharma and with payers, that a lot of the work we do is around, you know, gathering intelligence and kind of protecting and sustaining what we have already built.
Fantastic. And talk for a moment about sort of how much inflation are you seeing in drug cost? Is it under control, out of control? How much is that at supply chain versus generics, non-generics, and new therapeutics?
Yeah, it's a difficult, you know, the true definition of the word inflation. It's a difficult one for me to answer. The majority of our drug spend is landing in the 340B space. So it's a difficult thing to say. Our exposure, you know, in the non-340B space, i.e. with the GPOs and WAC spend, it is dramatically lower than it would have been 10 or 15 years ago, mostly because of, you know, the 340B program and its evolution.
Fantastic. And when you look at the end of this year, how much time is Chief Pharmacy Officer to spend on vaccine issues, vaccine hesitancy issues, and so forth? Does that fall within some of your bailiwick on the vaccines and so forth? And how
Scott, I'm very fortunate. In my role, the acute care pharmacy group, which has dozens of PharmDs in their unit, have largely taken over, a lot of activity around logistics, which would be, purchasing and controlling. We also have technicians and pharmacists involved in the immunizer role. We've got a nurse that's working for our acute care group, basically running the point as a manager of the immunization clinics. And of course, right now it's this kind of movement over into the booster mentality. And now today, I guess we're waiting for the FDA's, final position on children. And all of these things really affect our front lines from the pharmacy side. So yeah, we've stepped up as a profession here dramatically, during the pandemic.
And talk about, you've had a great leadership career. What piece of advice do you give to leaders, any kind of leader, not just in pharmacy, but what specific advice do you give to people?
Yeah, I hate rhetoric, Scott, but I would say, for me personally, my career's been so heavily dependent. The evolution of my career has been so heavily dependent on relationships. So, whether it be inside or outside the company here, certainly it has to go beyond your clinical skill set. I know many of the pharmacists that, that I know and that I work with are very, very expert in, their clinical niches. But I would say that you've really got to demonstrate your abilities outside of that comfort zone that we all have as PharmDs, in the conventional business world, if you will. So, anything around relationships and business savvy, understanding the politics of the company, I think that's really, for me, that would be my number one, piece of advice. Secondly, I would say, been involved in academics for such a long time. We all talk about continual learning, but you got to do it. You got to read the Wall Street Journal. You got to read Harvard Business Review. You got to be attentive to the world around you, namely, healthcare topics in the United States and in the world for that matter.
See, but I think that I actually, the two pieces of advice are so important, because obviously you have to be competent in your core of what you do, but these two other pieces of it, relationships and talking and listening and having good skills in dealing with people and mentors and growth, so important. And this concept of, and it's harder as we get older, as I get older for sure, this concept of constantly learning and categorizing and thinking is so important, because you can't be valuable. You have to be 80% great at your core job, but then 20%'s got to be connecting dots, making things happen, figuring things out. How do they connect? How do they work? And it becomes into these issues of problem solving on cost, 340B, all kinds of things. This understanding of your core job plus what's around you, I think is so important. So it may sound cliche, but it's, so many people are so good at their core, but to really be valuable, they've got to be good at the core and relationship driven and figuring out how other things connect and fit together. So I think your advice is magnificent. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. And the other couple of pieces that kind of help it all hold together is I've been intentionally, involved in, trade associations. Most recently, I'm about a year in my president's role with the health system owned Specialty Pharmacy Alliance. And I've been active at the Mass College of Pharmacy Board of Trustees now for 13 years. But just the raw exposure to global topics and people and style and to be results oriented and follow data to make decisions, all of that stuff really, comes together nicely when you've got these outside kind of interests, keeping your edge.
Well, and it keeps you fresh, because you're hearing what other people are doing. You're not sort of like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing that. You are on top of things. So you could think about, do we implement this? Do we use this sort of system? Do we not? But at least you're aware of what people are doing. You don't have to be first in technology, but when you're people that you're with the association are really starting to move forward on it, you sort of know, oh, we better start making stronger steps in this area, or whatever it might be. I think it's just so
yeah,
healthy.
Yeah, no, exactly
kind of
right.
Interaction
you know,
with
we've,
others.
You know, we've, you know, we're a small, you know, we're in the inner city here in Springfield, small kind of reach catchment area. And our five pharmacies, you know, several years back, we started, you know, our own small scale kind of home delivery program. But when you look around and see what, you know, Amazon and PillPack and CVS are doing, you know, we're carving out our own niche in a very local, you know, kind of geography. And we've always contended that, you know, we employ, you know, my company employs the docs, we own the real estate, the prescriptions are being written right here on our campus. So we've kind of wrapped around this pharmacy program, you know, with that fabric.
And are you in Springfield, Mass, where the Basketball Hall of Fame is?
Exactly. I'm probably a mile from the Hall of Fame.
So I guess the great question is, the greatest player of them all, Larry Bird, Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, where do you vote on the greatest player of them all? And then I have one more sports question for you, as long as I got you on the phone.
Well, I'm biased towards Bill Russell because I was accidentally over there a few years back. I don't know what year exactly. We were over there, a couple of us, you know, there's a restaurant attached to the building. We just happened to finish our meal and we came out and the players, the attendees were milling around. And we did see Bill Russell and the fans, you know, I don't know, a small gathering of 50, you know, random fans that happened to be in the area. Man, the round of applause and the chants and people were saying, you know, Bill Russell, greatest player of all time. So that would be my biased position.
He has more titles than Michael or Tom Brady, correct?
I think so.
I'm gonna check that one second. So the next question is, as a Massachusetts, New England person, so forth, well, you know, not Boston, but greater Massachusetts, the Belichick versus Brady. Who do you respect and like more?
Wow, that's a tough one. I guess if I were forced to answer in 10 seconds, I'd probably say Brady, but there's a strong, you know, strong following of Belichick's style and his, you know, commitment to detail and his work as a leader, you know, leading the team. So it's a tough question. Brady, of course, is in the media more, you know, in the press. And of course, handing the cap to the young boy a couple of days ago that was a brain cancer survivor, and you know that, you know, the follow up to that, and getting his 600th TD career pass. That stuff is all cool, but his entire persona, I guess, you know, is more powerful than maybe Bill Belichick.
He certainly has a bigger personality, a warmer personality, but Belichick's been crazily successful as well. Bill Russell, I guess, 11 titles in 13 years. For all the discussion of LeBron and Michael and so forth, he truly was a game changer as well, and 11 titles is magnificent. Even TB's got a long way to go to meet Bill Russell.
Yeah, I mean, there's a group of us up here that, you know, pay attention to the Patriots, and, you know, you're a couple of plays away. They could have beat Tampa, you know, with Folk hitting the crossbar, you know, at the end of the game in the rain. And then the Dallas game. I mean, Dallas converted a 3rd and 25, I think, at the end of the game to essentially win it. You're two plays away from being, I don't know, what are they, 3-4? They could be 5-2. And, I mean, that's a testament to Belichick and Josh McDaniel.
No, it's literally unbelievable what they've done. I could literally talk sports and how bad my Chicago Bears got beat by the Buccaneers and Tom Brady this past weekend for a long time, but I know we'll lose our audience to focus on Chief Pharmacy Officer and leadership. But Gary, what a great pleasure to visit with you today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a pleasure. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Scott. Have a great day.
A total pleasure.